Welcome to Friday. Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke with Sydney Brownstone, reporter at The Stranger, Chris Vance, former state legislator, King County councilman, former Republican, Luke Burbank, host of the TBTL podcast and Public Radio's Live Wire. Hi, everybody.
How's it Hello. Going?
It's good. We got a lot to talk about. Can we do this?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Exhibit A, this week, Minnesota Senator Al Franken went down.
I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate.
Multiple women say Franken grabbed, cupped, patted, and or forcibly kissed them. And Franken had apologized, said he was embarrassed and ashamed.
It gave some people the false impression that I was admitting to doing things that, in fact, I haven't done. Some of the allegations against me are simply not true. Others I remember very differently.
Franken also reminded us of the good he has done.
I am proud that during my time in the Senate, I have used my power to be a champion of women, and that I have earned a reputation as someone who respects the women I work alongside every day.
Okay, so a popular liberal member of a Senate where policies can come down to a single vote is resigning without even an ethics committee investigation. I talked this week to the journalist Grace Kong, who she's produced for all the big networks. She knows Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose, Bill O'Reilly. Here's why she says Franken should have stayed.
They think what Al Franken did is absolutely should be called out, and he's taken responsibility for it. But here's a senator, a leader, one of the very few leaders in the Senate who has done consistently good things for women, supported women, employed women. So isn't he better for the cause of women as a whole by staying in politics in a position of power and working on behalf of women as a repentant sexual harasser?
Sydney, isn't he better now? Maybe he's chastened and he's going to be even better for women of all people, Al Franken.
I think keeping someone who has been credibly accused of sexual harassment and groping is actually a political loss for the Democrats. And I don't know how the Democrats could maintain their credibility or trust when they continue to employ someone who's been credibly accused of those things.
Okay, a political loss. Let me ask about that because, for example, the reaction on KUOW's Facebook page overwhelmingly against Al Franken resigning. Dwight says, spoke for a lot of people, saying his forced resignation will feel good right up until a GOP Congress votes to outlaw contraception, maternity leave, abortion choice, and equal pay.
Well, first of all, his replacement in the short term is appointed by the Democrat governor of Minnesota. So
short term, though, right? Isn't Minnesota a battleground state?
It's somewhat a battleground state, although I think the number of battleground states are going to shrink. I mean, right now it's looking like a Democrat landslide in the 2018 midterm. So I don't think the Democrats would have a hard time holding on to Minnesota. But to Dwight's point, he's making exactly the same case that conservatives are making for why they're going to vote for Roy Moore in the reverse.
Exactly.
The ends do not always damn well justify the means. This behavior is wrong. There's a lot of specifics we can get into about this, and we probably will. But the bottom line is this entire phenomenon is incredibly healthy for our society. Perhaps men will start realizing this behavior is unacceptable. If you engage in it, you're going to lose your career. I think that's great.
Yeah, there are other Al Frankens waiting in the wings. I mean in terms of progressive lawmakers, not in terms of people who are handsy-pawsy, although that is also true.
Yeah, right.
In other words, the next generation of people who want to take public office will know, hopefully, if this has the desired effect, like Chris said, that you can't be a predator, basically, and keep your job. So if that means we're down in Al Franken, I think that's okay in the trade-off. And by the way, to just try to keep the same number of chess pieces on the board as the Democrats so you can keep, I mean, as they say, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. In 20 years, whether or not Al Franken was in the Senate for another year or two is not going to matter. But I think that our society is going to evolve in a better direction. And I think that the Democrats having at least some sort of moral compass is going to ultimately be a really good thing for them.
And before you even get into the political calculus or try and weigh his good works against the accusations against him, to me, this comes down to the very basic dignity, health, and safety of the women working on Capitol Hill, right? Like, if you have someone who's been credibly accused of groping while he's been a senator, I mean, a lot of the accusations preceded his time as a senator, but one of them was in 2010. if you don't respect the women working in Congress, that's a basic first step. That's a basic standard of human decency. So before we get to this kind of lofty political talk, we have to ensure that.
Okay, well, regarding the lofty political talk, Chris asserted something, that the ends don't justify the means. But I want to question that. How do you know? If, let's say that we're not accurately predicting the political future of this faraway state of Minnesota, and there's a Republican senator and another Republican vote, how do you know that a GOP Congress won't be more likely to outlaw contraception, maternity leave, abortion choice, equal pay, whatever is important to you? How do you know that the ends don't justify the means?
Again, that is exactly the argument that the right and the moderate Republicans are making about Trump and about Roy Moore.
But that's attaching names to the argument. Well, I understand people may not be able to stand Roy Moore or Donald Trump, but I still want to understand Dwight is raising an argument that the ends do in this case justify the means. I just want to make sure that we know that that's not true.
I don't believe it's true. And why? Well, again, for all the reasons Luke said, that this is corrosive to our society, and it's just flat wrong. And to make it a crystal clear statement that you cannot engage in this behavior or there will be major consequences is more healthy for our culture and our democracy than any policy you could debate.
And this entire conversation, this makes me angry because I feel like women and minorities and other marginalized groups are constantly being asked to cede their principles and their preferences and their rights, and in this case, their physical safety or careers, for some imagined political gain that only advantages white men. So
why is that?
Well,
Dwight brought up the case of contraception, maternity leave, abortion choice, and equal pay. Is that the wrong? Are those the wrong issues to give as examples of how Republicans could have a political advantage if they're the only ones keeping their harassers in office?
No, but again, I'm pointing out like the physical safety of women working in the office immediately. So they're being asked to give up their immediate rights, basically, in order to kind of see something in the long term. And this issue I've seen referenced many times as a purity test. What isn't a purity test, right? Like, what is objectively not a purity test? I think that the Democratic Party, as an organization, has branded itself as the culture or the party of diversity, the party of fighting for the little guy, of standing up for women's rights. How can you maintain that, you know, party brand if you're willing to sacrifice the women working in your organization?
Imagine it were 50 years ago and the question was segregation. And you had a candidate or a person who was currently in office who was pro-segregation, but they had a very liberal or progressive idea of taxation. I don't know if that person really existed, but just as a thought experiment. Would you rather that person was passing, if you're a Democrat, passing some progressive laws in the short term, but ultimately was standing up for segregation?
Okay.
Like 50 years later?
That's exactly what did happen. The Democratic Party in the South supported the New Deal, but they were racist to their core in terms of making sure that black people couldn't vote. So that's exactly right.
The larger issue of whether women in most of these cases, as Sydney said, feel safe and feel that they have agency, I think that is a larger cultural issue than any specific tax that gets passed or not passed, or even, I mean, maybe the healthcare thing is debatable, but I think it's a huge issue. And in 20 years, I think we'll look back on it as something akin to a civil rights issue.
I'm doing my best to represent the KOW Facebook page yeah. posters here because we're unanimous the opposite direction in this room. But I think, and I know, Luke, you're just making an analogy. Analogies, they're not perfect. They're useful to sort of reframe it. Hey, think of it this way. But I can imagine one of those KOW Facebook posters say, slow down. Someone who's grabbing people during photo op, grabbing butts during photo ops, it's bad. It's not segregation. You know, let me try to find some of the comments I got from the Facebook page. Republicans are slapping their backs and laughing like hell at this BS. Way to stab the party in the back. You do not give up a seat to the Coke GOP when they'll let in even worse, way worse pig like Roy Moore.
But that,
so we're
that
we
assumes
are
that Roy Moore
how bad
is going to run to
are.
Fill Al Franken's seat. You know what I mean? I mean, that's, I think, part of maybe where I don't get totally on board with this idea. it's very possible that another Democrat will be elected in Al Franken's seat ultimately. Yeah. So it's not just a given that the Democrats are handing this over to somebody else. And I think that's important to remember.
And beyond that, what you're laying out here is exactly what worries me the most, is that the tribalism that has infected our politics. Hmm. Both sides, and people yell at me when I say this because everybody in the Seattle area loves to hate Republicans, love to hate Donald Trump. And they hate it when I say it's both sides. This is an illustration of that. Both sides hate the other side so much that they're willing to excuse just abhorrent behavior in their tribe. And whatever my tribe does is okay, and whatever the other tribe does is terrible. This is what's tearing our democracy apart.
Are we getting tweets on this at KOW? Because I wish our listeners could fire back at this. It sounds like you're saying to one of these Facebook posters that you are now understanding what it means to betray your values in order to score political points, mm-hmm. which is what maybe you accuse your political opponents of doing.
There's no maybe about it.
And this Facebook commenter is also saying that the Republicans are laughing at us. But I hear that, and I've done a little bit of a tour of right-wing media on this issue. They're not laughing at us because we're ousting Al Franken because he is perceived to have done something lesser than Roy Moore. They're laughing at us because of our own hypocrisy on this issue. They're saying, you know, some people are supporting Al Franken and while pointing their finger at Roy Moore, right?
Okay.
Hypocrisy.
Yes. Sorry to interrupt. A couple other arguments I want to tick through. Brandy writes, I'm actually concerned there won't be any candidates pure enough to pass the test. Is that completely bogus? There's plenty of
I think there are more people that are currently still in the Senate and the House who have not had allegations brought against them than there are those who've had allegations, right?
Okay.
We don't know that.
We don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
I'm saying as of right now, and by the way, to all these Facebook posters, thank you for your donation to KUOW. Please
yes.
keep it coming.
How about this? Carol writes, the loss of a good man and a good public servant for what, in my opinion, was done by all men forever. Genevieve says he made a mistake and learned from it. He should not be punished. What about the lots of people did it, it was bad, and forgive him?
It's just not true. I mean, all men forever?
Let's say that's...
It's hyperbolic, but it's also...
Telling me that a Facebook post might be exaggerated in its language?
Yeah, I mean,
but we haven't really covered that idea of forgive Al Franken, you know, maybe now he knows better. It wasn't a Weinstein moment back then. I want to address that.
Isn't there a mechanism for this, which is if Al Franken wants to be a senator again, he can run for the Senate, and then the voters in that district can decide if he has been properly disciplined and punished. And then if they think he has, it's sort of on them to elect, as similar to folks in Alabama, as troubling as that is to many people, it's ultimately their right who they want to elect to represent them, right? I mean, isn't that how we will know if Al Franken has been redeemed or if what he did was, quote unquote, bad?
Well, careful, though. That is the argument the White House is making, basically. They're saying, oh, yeah, well, the president did this and he talked about it and then the American people elected him anyway. So it's been litigated and decided. I don't like that. I think some things should be beyond elections and they're just flat wrong and unacceptable.
Yeah. Voting is only one system of accountability. Right. And I think the point about this being common behavior, I take that. And I think that's probably true. But to forgive and not put in any system of accountability allows it to continue. Right. Allowing men to operate this way with impunity is part of the problem and why it's so persistent and why it's so difficult to kind of deconstruct at this moment in time.
Okay, another political question. Chris, this is your bailiwick. Darren writes, while I can agree that we need to ask Al Franken to step down, what I don't understand is why Democrats in the House voted against impeaching President Trump. This week, our own Pramila Jayapal, Seattle's Pramila Jayapal, was the only member of Congress from Washington who voted yes on a resolution to impeach Trump. Where are the politics there?
The Democratic leadership is worried that if they get out and push impeachment too soon and too hard, then they lose the swing votes, the, I don't know, 10 to 15% of Americans who are still undecided about Donald Trump. And what they want to do is wait to see what the Mueller investigation actually comes up with, which I think actually is the most responsible thing. We've appointed a special counsel. At some point, the special counsel will make a recommendation on whether or not impeachment proceedings are warranted. And so the prudent thing politically and really substantively for the Democrats is to wait for that to to play its course. But the Democrat base is getting pretty antsy about that. And I think probably Ms. Jayapal made a good vote for her her district, wants to see that sort of activism.
Isn't there just also the simple numbers of the situation
right.
as of right now? I mean, it just the Democrats don't have enough people in the House and in the Senate, it would seem. Now, after the midterm elections, that could be a whole other story. And my sense would be that if the Democrats were to take back Congress, I think you'd see an impeachment resolution get a lot of support, don't you think?
Yes, I think it would. Although even what's Mueller is the key to this entire thing. Nothing else really matters. The investigations in Congress don't really matter. If the Mueller effort comes back and says there's impeachable offenses, then I think he's going to be impeached. I think it'd be even hard for the Republicans to stand in the way of that. If he doesn't, then the Democrats are going to have a heck of a mountain to climb. Even if they have the majority in the House, they would have a hard time getting 2/3 of the votes in the Senate.
On the other hand, if the Democrats really wanted to send a unified message that having an admitted sexual predator in the highest executive office of the country wasn't cool, they could have all voted for impeachment.
The Seattle Times reported this week on allegations against Washington State Republican House member Matt Manweller. Former students of his at Central Washington said he sexually propositioned them. The investigator said the evidence suggested Manweller did that, but the college dean said there'd be no disciplinary action because it happened so long ago. In fact, the university promoted him, paid his attorney fees, and gave him back pay. In Olympia, where Manweller is a legislator, anonymous lobbyists said he made comments about their physical features. Manweller calls it a Weinstein witch hunt.
Well, I thought that was common practice. Oh, you look very nice today, or that dress looks pretty on you, or something like that. I have said things like that. I don't deny it. And if people were offended by it, I guess we live in a culture where, you know, just everybody's offended by everything.
If he's going to pick a witch hunt, I wouldn't go with Weinstein.
No?
That doesn't seem like much of a witch hunt at this point.
Right.
That seems like a extremely likely scenario where somebody was a sexual predator, right?
Yes. And that was him talking, by the way, to Cairo Radio. Setting aside what you think of Manweller's, hey, I may have been misunderstood. I said they had a nice haircut or whatever it is. Does anyone think that workplace culture will change as a result of these allegations and revelations, that people will, that what was commonly some people thought was okay, maybe it's a gray area, maybe we're going to do it differently. Do you see things changing, and if so, in a good way in workplace?
This is not new. I mean, when I served on the King County Council, which was now many years ago, the entire legislative branch went through this sort of training. And the rules haven't changed. Anybody who's working in a modern American workplace already should know what the rules are. It's just, I think, this whole episode, beginning with Harvey Weinstein and on down, is saying, no, we weren't kidding. We mean it. And you really, really can't get away with this stuff. So I don't think anything's going to really, it shouldn't change. We all should know what the rules are.
In Manweller's case, I also just want to clarify that he wasn't only accused of making inappropriate comments. He was also accused of kissing someone without her consent. Yeah. So that's like, a physical violation.
Yes,
alleged.
Thank you.
Alleged. Yeah. And the other thing is that I think his case demonstrates the extent to which institutions, I mean, he's a tenured professor, advantage the accused over the accuser, right? Like the investigator in both of the cases in 2012 and 2013 found credible testimony and found evidence. Nevertheless, because of the length of time that had lapsed, he wasn't punished. He wasn't disciplined at all in the 2012 case. And I think that just shows that our institutions have a long way to go in understanding how these processes work and how victims of sexual harassment are still facing major obstacles when it comes to accessing justice.
And how complicated all of these events can be. If people wonder why sometimes people don't come forward, if the reporting is accurate on Manweller, one of the people who he allegedly made an advance on was trying to get him to write a letter of recommendation to law school, I think, and it felt like her future, and I think her boyfriend's future as well, was kind of hinging on having a good relationship with this guy. And so, I mean, to people who wonder why everyone doesn't just, like, upon the first violation, immediately call 911.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff is really complicated. And you're like a college student and you are wondering if this is worth jeopardizing your whole academic future over. I mean, that's a really hard decision to make.
And, you know, when we get into, you know, the more serious physical violations, like the trauma that comes with that, it takes people sometimes years to grapple with that. And our system is not trauma informed, right? Like the entire idea of the statute of limitations, which we've discussed on this show too, assumes that someone, if they were telling the truth, would come forward and report it right away. When really we know from real life cases that doesn't always, and sometimes in the majority of cases, doesn't happen.
Any other observations, final where are we thoughts on sexual assault harassment before we move on to other stories of the week?
Well, I will just say that, so I started out, you know, talking about how my views on this. I'll tell you what I'm hearing behind the scenes is everybody who works in politics, Republicans and Democrats, this is all they're talking about. And they are scared to death. Every operative out there, staff people who work for various members, elected officials, are worried about what's the next shoe to drop, who's the Seattle Times working on now, and how do you deal with this? Is it survivable? How do you engage in crisis communications on this? This has really freaked out the entire political world out there.
And you're saying it shouldn't be survivable. We started with Al Franken, and you said, no, basically it's not survivable and shouldn't be.
It shouldn't. If it's a credible accusation and it's pretty clear you engage in this behavior, it should not be survivable.
And then you get into, is it clear? It's only clearer that you engaged in it if you admit it and apologize. If you say, I completely deny the allegation, then who is it clear to?
And that's the corollary to this, is a lot of people I've talked to are like worried about claims that aren't true. You know, somebody, a political opponent, just making a claim. I don't think that's a real possibility, because all of these so far have been vetted by the mainstream media, and they're very careful not to print stuff that isn't credible. So if you see a credible story in a mainstream outlet, it's probably been well-sourced and well-researched. So, but a lot of political people right now are worried about, is this going to get weaponized, and you're just going to start seeing baseless claims out there on this.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of fretting about, you know, what does believe women mean, and, you know, what's trial by the media. But as a journalist, I believe that it's with these types of stories, when you're reporting them, to some degree, it's even more important to have everything immaculately fact-checked before you go forward and you know, having corroborating evidence because of the cultural bias that assumes the woman is lying or doing it for political gain.
And I would just say to anybody, whether they're Republican or Democrat, if you have the tendency to think that the other team's guy totally did it, and if you have the tendency to think that when your guy is accused, it's probably a setup, you might want to take a moment to really think about that, you know?
We could always elect women. Just throwing it out there. Elect more women.
Yeah, well, and the final thing is, this is an example of how the two parties live on different planets. If you're a Republican and you represent a strongly Republican district or Republican state, you can survive this. Just say it's fake news. It's coming from the evil media, and I'm a man's man. I mean, they're literally talking about that. You can survive this if you're a Republican, which is disgusting. But for Democrats, it's really not survivable, because just of the nature of the Democratic Party and how important women are and women's groups are to the Democrats. So it doesn't seem fair, but Roy Moore is going to win on Tuesday probably, and the world, that's just wrong.
Chris Vance speaks Republican, although he's no longer a He's no longer a member.
Nope.
Former state Republican Party chair. Sydney Brownstone, reporter at The Stranger. Luke Burbank, the TBTL podcast, and The Week in Review. Stay tuned. KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke with Sydney Brownstone, Chris Vance. Luke Burbank is at the Neptune Theater this Saturday night, presented by KUOW. Luke, who's on the show?
We have noted trivia enthusiast Ken Jennings there, and also
we love Ken.
John Roderick.
Oh, yeah.
They've got a new podcast together. Yeah. It's called Omnibus, and they title it as a podcast for the end of the world, which was probably a joke when they wrote it, but feels very possible at this point. We also have Anastasia Renee, who's the civic poet of Seattle. We got music from Laura Gibson, and like four more people that I can't even mention because the list is so long, but it's going to be a very fun night, 7 p.m. at the Neptune. Hope to see people there.
Okay, let's talk about other lesser events that might happen around town. Like there's the Neptune, obviously. That's
right.
Big.
Big time.
Yeah, a hockey game. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see. This week, Seattle came closer to being an NHL hockey town, getting in a National Hockey League team.
The NHL will allow Seattle to apply for a professional hockey franchise. It was a unanimous vote, and we think we're going to be bringing hockey back to Seattle.
Yay!
Mayor Jenny Durkan there holding up an NHL jersey announcing that an ownership group will start a season ticket drive to prove they can sell enough tickets to sustain a team. Luke, will they sell enough tickets?
I guess this is how the process works, but I have to say, saying we are announcing we will allow you to apply for this is like I'm announcing I will allow people to apply for being my girlfriend. Like, it's a little, okay, don't get too high on your horse, NHL.
Yeah.
Probably there will be great interest. I mean, my personal feeling as someone who still mourns the loss of the Sonics is that there are probably a lot of people who are just excited to get some kind of new major sports franchise here. And so
does that help? I mean, you missed the Sonics from years ago. Is it like any port in a storm? Is it because it's pro? I mean, there's already the Thunderbirds are like a minor league team. Help me. What's
well,
the psychology?
I mean, look, and actually Chris has a Sounders jersey on and is quite the Sounders fan. Mm-hmm. And I think the Sounders are also an example of this. They, you know, I mean, they've been around Seattle in some capacity for many, many years, but the MLS version really captivated the imaginations of a lot of people. And my anecdotal experience on that is a lot of those people, not all of them, but a lot of those people didn't have a real strong rooting interest in an existing team here. Either they moved here or just weren't that into like football or whatever. Not everybody, but a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And maybe the hockey team will also captivate the imagination of a bunch of people who haven't really had a sport they're into. I, as a person who has like been a diehard Seahawks, Huskies, and Mariners fan, I don't have room for another
You're
sports
good.
Relationship. And I can't learn a new sport. It's like, I don't know. I mean, I know that you hit it in the net and sometimes you're allowed to fight, but like, I honestly don't have the bandwidth to try to learn a new sport. So,
well, hockey's awesome. And Seattle's a big market now. And there's a hunger here for hockey. This is great news for Jenny Durkan. I was on the King County Council when we did the big debates over both Safeco Field and CenturyLink Field and saving the Mariners and the Seahawks. And, you know, it's just sports, right? But believe me, nothing roils up local government like a stadium fight. And this issue about Key Arena, the Sonics, a hockey team, this started when Greg Nichols was mayor. And it plagued him and every mayor that's come since him. And it seems that this is going to be moving towards getting solved. We're going to remodel Key Arena. We're going to get an NHL team. The NHL is only asking one city to apply for the one spot for an expansion team.
To be Luke's girlfriend?
We're going to get, we're going to get a hockey team. And then I think shortly thereafter, you're going to get an NBA team also in the remodeled Key Arena. And it's good for the city. And it's great news for Mayor Durkan to take that offer. She gets to make happy announcements, unlike poor Greg Nichols who had announced that the Sonics were leaving.
She'll get to avoid criticism from angry sports people like the Seattle City Council, the women on the Seattle City Council faced. Was it last year? Yeah,
yes.
It was last year. Samantha Bee made a segment out of it. It was.
Will you remind us what happened? The dramatic vote, the street vacation that Chris Hansen wants. Do you remember the
I don't remember the exact details, but the city council just didn't want to give away public land for, you know, for an unclear gain, right?
Oh.
And then the women of the Seattle City Council were swamped with very angry, misogynist attacks from sports people.
Because wasn't it five women voting for and
we
four men?
We prefer sports Americans.
Sports Americans. I'm sorry to cause offense. Yeah. Personally, my familiarity with hockey begins and ends with air hockey, and my college team, my college sports teams were called the Violets. So, I've never known what it means to root for a home team other than the Eagles, which disappointed me the other week with the Seahawks.
You're from Philadelphia?
Yes, sir. Okay.
But, I mean, like, I'm actually curious about what happens when a town gets a completely new sport to it. Like, obviously, the Thunderbirds have been here for years, and a lot of people love going to the Thunderbirds games. Sometimes, you know, some people have moved here from other places that have hockey teams. But for a large number of native Seattleites, myself being one, we don't have experience with having a professional hockey team. And so we collectively will have to actually learn a new sport. And for me, what I love about the sports that I've been following my whole life, whether it's basketball or baseball or football, is all of the in-jokes about the people who came before. I love a good Brian Bosworth joke. I love to send my friends pictures of, like, obscure Sonics, like Frank Burkowski or something. Mm. I don't have that sense with hockey because I didn't grow up with it on a professional level.
Who's the Jerome James of hockey?
Thank
we
you.
Can refer to.
That's
but,
right.
But we went through this. I mean, I've lived here my whole life. I remember in the mid-70s when we got the Seahawks and the Mariners, and we had never before had an NFL.
But people knew what the sports were. They probably knew the basic rules because they were national sports.
People,
hockey is still in its own weird category, I think, if you're...
Really? People have been playing hockey for a long time. I think you'd be surprised how many hockey fans there are out there. How many people right now regularly drive up to Vancouver for hockey games.
What's better? What's more awesome, soccer or hockey?
Soccer. But I love anything. I love everything involving a ball or a stick or a puck, but soccer is my favorite, and go Sounders tomorrow. But like my two brothers-in-law are huge hockey fans. This is going to be very successful, very popular, and good. It's just really good news, period.
I'm not trying to say it's not going to be popular. I'm just saying it'll be, as I've already said like four times, as a really diehard sports fan who's kind of like, how am I going to fit this into my life? I'm curious to see what it's like when a whole region is like, what is icing? You know, like, how do we throw octopuses on the ice if something happens?
Yeah.
Like,
I have to get my cataracts removed because I've never seen a hockey puck. Like, I've seen the soccer ball. I know it exists. I don't know. I'm told that there is a puck. But I can't see it. It's moving too fast and it's too small.
My only interest in hockey is, what's the name of that machine that they drive over the ice?
Zamboni.
Zamboni!
Yeah.
That's it.
Great.
That's the only thing I can get excited about.
You're sold.
So none
I want to drive a Zamboni.
None of you watched the U.S. hockey team beat the Russians in 1980, right? I mean, jeez.
I wasn't watching it a year ago.
Yeah, right.
Okie dokie.
Did you know how many countries played hockey in the 2014 Olympics? 12 teams. That's it.
That's you know how many. No. That's how many qualified to send teams to the Olympics.
Oh,
you know who's not going to be able to play hockey soon? Russia.
Yeah.
Not in the Olympics.
By the
not
way,
the
doesn't Seattle have a Stanley Cup?
Yes.
Or two?
Yes, we won the first Stanley Cup back in 1917, the Seattle Metropolitans, back in the early days of the NHL. And there's a lot of people that want to make sure this team is named the Metropolitans.
Would be a cool name.
As an homage to that, yeah.
I like that. Okay, I take it back. We have a rich history. Everybody knows hockey here.
It was called the Stanley Goblet at the time. and we have some suggestions on Twitter for the name of the team. Andy says Seattle Freeze.
That would be
tip of the hat, Andy, on Twitter. Yeah. Brandon says the Long Shots, which is kind of, I like it because it's combining a hockey joke. I believe that's a shot from far away, and Seattle's kind of sports woes at the same time. We feel like long shots in anything we do. On email, Jody says Seattle Sockeye, but somebody suggested, you mentioned Samantha Bee. Using the C words.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Seattle C words?
Yeah, the C words. Yeah,
because of all the guff the female city council members took? Yeah, so that could be the name.
Yeah, or maybe the incremental progressives.
That would be an extremely Seattle. That would be very on brand for Seattle in the naming of the hockey team.
And beyond hockey, Seattle really has needed a great indoor arena. They don't have one now. We are unable to compete for the biggest conventions and some of the biggest trade shows. Hopefully remodeled Key Arena will help with that. And doing it at Key Arena avoids this whole battle with the port, which you would have had if you did it down at Soto. So I just think this is a win-win-win-win.
This is kind of a useless thing for me to throw in, so let me do that
real
quick. I just happened to be last night at an event, and I was talking to an extremely high-placed executive in the NBA. This person runs an NBA team. And they just said off the cuff, Seattle will never get an NBA team. And he didn't elaborate, and he might have just had a few, you know, cocktails.
Why would Mark Cuban say that?
Exactly.
Yeah, like what event were you at where you're talking to this, you know, executive?
You know, I run in some pretty exclusive circles. I don't know if you know, but podcasting is really blowing up.
Oh, okay.
So when Steve Ballmer said that to you, you said what?
This person didn't own a team. They were like the executive of a team. And
okay.
And they said, well, you know, honestly, when you talk to people like that, they say things with such assurance that you kind of just go, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
So he just said, you're going to love hockey. And also, Seattle's never getting an NBA team.
You believe it?
Well, I mean, he would know more than I would, probably. Yeah. This is what he does all day, thinking about this stuff. But it made me feel a little sad because, I would love to get an NBA team back here as well. So,
hockey superior because soccer players fake their injuries like crazy, and hockey players are proud of them, proud of the missing teeth, right?
No, but that is one of the really bad things about soccer is the culture of flopping.
But good luck, Sounders, anyway. They're playing tomorrow in Toronto.
1:00.
That would be their second in a row.
Second consecutive MLS Cup.
Okay, scarves up. Okay, we got a little more to talk about on the Week in Review with Chris Vance, Luke Burbank, Sydney Brownstone. Stay tuned. Week in Review on KUOW, Sydney Brownstone, reporter at The Stranger, Chris Vance, former Republican and chair of that party in this state, Luke Burbank, host of Livewire, host of Too Beautiful to Live. Do you even call it Too Beautiful to Live, or is it officially, is it like KFC? Is it officially only TBTL?
It's, you know, the problem when we describe the full name is then I have to try to explain what it means, and even I don't understand that 10 years in.
Right, because you're not that beautiful.
No.
So it's confusing to people.
Maybe when the show started, but not these days.
Right. So we covered Al Franken leaving, not a big surprise. Seattle's police chief leaving. Did you see that coming, Sydney?
There had been a lot of speculation for a very long time, and actually Irish Press reported back in May that she was expected to, you know, eventually wrap up her position. And
the Irish Press?
Yeah, there's a line from an article in an Irish paper where it says that this is expected. I, at the time, back in May, I tried getting in touch with the Irish authorities to be like, can you confirm this to me? But they wouldn't say anything, and then when we went to SPD, Kathleen O'Toole said, you know, no, I'm still figuring out what the requirements are, but I'm expecting to stay here. So clearly the Irish press had an inside line to someone in Irish government that the Seattle press could not get in on. No hard feelings.
Uh-huh.
But yeah,
I mean, this, you out.
Yeah, the people have been talking about Kathleen O'Toole's departure for months.
If you're not one of the people of the clover, then they're just not even going to speak to you.
I know. Yeah. I know. Sydney O'Brownstone. Maybe.
Yeah, no, should have created a Gmail account.
Yeah.
That's just basic journalism. That's gumshoe journalism.
Yeah.
Right there. So, Chris, you think Seattle should skip the national search?
Well, I'm not enough in the inside to know. I've never met any of these people. But whenever somebody takes over an organization or whenever they have to replace a major position, they always want to say, I'm going to do a national search. Like, that's impressive or something. If Carmen Best, who's the next person in line, is someone with whom the mayor has confidence, and you think you can continue the culture that the current chief has built, I think the public would welcome just saying we're going to promote from internally and from within and skip the whole national search thing. But that's a, you know, I don't know. That's just a big if. But if I were advising the mayor, I'd advise her to seriously consider just promote the next person who seems to be a very impressive candidate.
Yeah, why wouldn't the deputy chief know everything she needs to know? She's right there.
Yeah, and a couple of important things about Carmen Best. I mean, it seems like she has a good relationship with the community police commission, whose future is undetermined, right? I mean, once this consent decree wraps up, what will the community police commission become? Second thing, she would be the first Black woman to hold that position, which would be a really big deal for us. I think it would be great to strongly consider her.
She was a finalist for Dallas's position, Dallas's chief, I think. She seems eminently qualified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Some kind of search, whether it's national or not. They haven't handed Carmen Best the job. She's an internal candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also this week, I want to talk about a Seattle institution, a beloved Seattle landmark that I had never heard of. But I keep reading about how, 47 years, Bakeman's, you got to go to Bakeman's downtown. Everybody went to Bakeman's. Chris, you're nodding your head.
Yeah.
You know from Bakeman's.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was younger, I worked in the King County Courthouse, and it's a short walk to Bakeman's, and you'd go there for lunch, and you stand in line with your tray and go down the lines. It's an old-fashioned cafeteria-type place. And they are famous for roasting turkeys, like Thanksgiving, right there. Their turkey sandwiches are famous. But the other thing they're famous for is their meatloaf. Their meatloaf is, you know, all apologies to my wife and my mother, but their meatloaf's the best I've ever had. And the meatloaf sandwich from Bakeman's is just awesome.
You know, I might have been there. It's just that when you're downtown and you can't see an awning or something, you can't see a big sign. I don't know where I am. I'm just, if a place looks crowded, I'll turn left and go into that place and have a turkey sandwich.
It's a hole in the wall. I mean, you got to go down some stairs underground practically to get in there. And so I'd always be the guy, people, turkey, 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 meatloaf, you know, and so.
What's the clientele?
Everybody who works in that area. But what's interesting is I'm old enough to remember when Seattle was a working class, kind of grubby, blue collar, lunch bucket kind of place. And so you had places like the old Red, White, and Blue Cafe and Bakeman's. Now everything in Seattle is tapas and sushi and very fancy.
Make your voice like this while you're saying it.
Yeah, and Bakeman's is a throwback to what the Seattle waterfront and downtown and their area around Pioneer Square used to be.
Okay, well, I'm also told that the owner of this place, Jason Wong, who worked the counter, was famous for hassling his customers, maybe for fun, maybe so he could move 300 people through every day. Here's a guest on Channel 9's Check Please talking about the hassling.
It's a little gruff. I'm a New York, New Jerseyan, so it feels like home there. You know, it's like, hey, order your food and get out of the way. You know, so first timers there can kind of, it's like deer in the headlights to some people, and it's actually fun. I like sitting to be able to watch the line and wait for someone to like yell at one of the customers. So they go, what, did you just yell at me? It's like, yeah, get back in line. What are you ordering? You're taking too long.
People love being yelled at. Sydney, you're the most recently East Coaster in the room from Philly, you said. Is that a taste of home when a stranger yells at you in public?
It is, actually. And I kind of miss yelling at strangers in public.
Really?
In return. But I haven't been cut off by a car here as frequently as I did in New York or Philly, so I don't have the opportunity to bang on the hood and like shout some expletives at them.
It's a loss. Like, yeah. You'd be able to say, I'm walking here! And
exactly.
you got rid of something.
Yeah, sometimes I do just say that to the wind, you know, just to see if anyone will be aggressive back, but it hasn't happened yet.
I'm sorry.
I like the efficiency of moving people through the line, just because I'm an impatient person, but the shtick of, like, you're the blank Nazi. First of all, I feel like with the amount of real Nazis that are not even ashamed to be on social media, maybe we need a new word like the soup jerk.
Yeah. If everyone doesn't know this, I think this guy, I don't know, he embraced it, he started it, but people would call this guy at Bakeman's the sandwich Nazi after the
soup Nazi
on Seinfeld. It's, you know, okay, go on. So he's so gruff, he says, hurry up.
I like the moving it along thing, but I also get stressed out in these situations when it's like you're in a play, a two-person play that you didn't really sign up for. Like, I was just in this place in Chicago called the Wiener Circle, which is a hot dog stand.
Wait. Could you repeat the name of that?
The Wiener's Circle.
Okay, yeah.
It's a hot dog stand, and they're...
It's like the Winner's Circle.
Yeah.
Except it's not.
And they, you know, their shtick, and I think it's because, I mean, it's a real funky little joint, and a lot of people will come late at night, very drunk, and I think it started with them needing to just try to corral and control this mass of drunk people, but it became the shtick that they yell at everybody. And you go in there, and I felt mildly stressed out because I knew their job was to yell at me, and then my job was to, like, do whatever the customer's job is. And I was like, that shtick is kind of fun, but also sometimes kind of stressful. Not because I feel bad about being yelled at, but because I feel pressure like their heart's not really in it. Like, they don't even, what about the days when this guy got up and didn't feel like yelling at people about sandwiches?
You're right.
He wanted to serve some sandwiches, but he's like, gotta make the donuts, gotta scream at the Chris Vances of the world as they try to order a turkey sandwich.
Yeah.
No, meatloaf.
They order a meatloaf.
Someone so enthusiastic about meatloaf, and I would want to know, like, what makes meatloaf good.
That's okay. I want to know too.
Bakeman's is open until December 22nd. Just go down there and get yourself a meatloaf sandwich.
But what's good about the meatloaf? It's meatloaf.
Does it have sliced olives in it, or what's the special?
I don't know.
Like just, a spicy
seasoned just
cocktail
right.
sauce.
It was fresh. He just makes it that day. It was really thick, and you know, he had the sourdough bread. It's just perfect.
And he hates you?
No. I always thought he kind of liked. Because it was, you'd go down the line, everybody's like, turkey, turkey, turkey. And then I'd be the guy, meatloaf, and you'd go, oh, good, something different. And
So he was negging everybody, but then when he kind of showed you a slight bit of affection, you were like, I'm in.
And
you don't really want to be yelled at and belittled, right? You want to think that you're one of the
through.
Good ones.
Yeah, I want everyone to be yelled at and belittled around me, but then I'll be the shining example of what.
And you're right, it was the kind of place that the first time you walked into Bakeman's, you had to break the code and figure out how I'm supposed to act and how I'm supposed to order, and then you're good. But it for first timers, they're like, and tourists don't do well there.
Do people purposely slow down so that they can get yelled at, and thus
I never saw that.
No?
No.
Okay. Because you love it because it's so authentic, you know? It's not just this customer's always right. Yes, sir, because he's being real.
No one's described as a sandwich artist in there, for instance.
And he's being gritty and authentic, except you don't, you're happy because you're not authentically being belittled. Because you wouldn't like that, right?
There was one thing in the article that I made me glad I hadn't visited the place, which is his example of something that annoyed him was people asking if they had pickles. And because he was like, well, what kind of place doesn't have pickles?
Right.
Which is a reasonable thing for him to say. But like, I always ask if they have pickles or if I can get more pickles.
Yeah,
I really like
too.
Pickles. And I would have seen myself first time in there asking apparently what is like the worst question you can ask this guy.
Yeah. But Luke, your earlier point about Nazi branding maybe being in trouble. I mean, the original soup man went, he filed for bankruptcy earlier this year.
The soup Nazi in New York City?
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe 2017 is not a good year for people who built their brands on Nazis.
Here's hoping.
By the way, I do want to say to the, as far as I know, good people at Bakeman's, good and gruff, best of luck to Jason there at Bakeman's. Congratulations, 47 years.
He said he's thinking about, buried at the end of the article, he mentioned maybe he'll open a restaurant in a smaller place somewhere. So it doesn't sound like he's totally getting out of the gruffness game.
No, forget, bottom line, the food's good, okay? It's not about the shtick. The food there is good. So before it closes, everybody go try it.
Go down there, everybody crowd into Bakeman's so that the service is slow and he's just loses his mind with gruffness and convince him that he did the wrong thing and he should stay open after
and do
all.
An improv everywhere thing where every person asks if they have pickles.
Yeah.
For like 100 people in a row.
Right.
Oh, man.
Who've heard him yell at the person in front of them in line also ask if they have pickles.
Seattle institution that will be missed by Chris Vance.
Yes.
And many, many others. Finally, on the Week in Review, I talked this week to not a recycling Nazi, I wouldn't say, just someone from a recycling center who's letting you know about the holiday, you know, the holiday garbage and what you should do to minimize that stuff. And we got into a little bit the whole idea of coffee cup lids. And a coworker of mine goes lid free. No lids, Jerry. No lids. And I'm trying it this week. Lid free. Is anybody else lid free?
I would not be alive if I was lid free.
Why not?
Because I have a hole in my chin. I mean, I'm just the biggest klutz in the universe. I would immediately spill hot coffee all over myself. But then maybe I could sue, you know, whatever coffee company I get myself.
There's that.
From and
yeah.
Get a nice settlement out of that.
But maybe you just need to slow down. Maybe that's a sign to you. If you can't walk through life without spilling coffee, maybe you need to slow down a little bit and smell the coffee. I'm telling you, that is deep. It's working for me. I smell the whole thing. I got the whole sensual experience. I don't have to put my lips around that tiny little hole in the white plastic, you know. I'm getting the whole thing. Maybe I'm walking a little slower, a little less in the landfill. I was totally against this. I said, "What are you talking about? It's going to get cold. You're going to spill it."
Yeah, but as you're walking, you're like a human level going down the Ave trying to keep that fluid constant and not spilling out of your cup. That's
everything
like you're
about
going to finishing
you,
school.
Everything about you can pivot around the coffee cup. Anything else can happen. You could slip on ice, whatever it is, but you now are this, what's the thing called? The gyroscope, you know, that keeps it perfectly level. There could be an earthquake, but you will now, when you get attuned, you'll make sure that coffee cup doesn't spill and you'll keep it out of the landfill.
Doesn't it necessitate having less coffee, though? Like, do you say, I'm going lid-free, please, can I just have like 2/3 of a cup? Because there's no way it could be full all the way, right?
That was one of my objections. I said, what are you talking about? You can't fill the cup now. And then the retort from my colleague was, do you need to fill your coffee cup? Do you need to fill your coffee cup? And no, it turns out I really don't. I can leave, I'll sip it. If it's too full, I'll sip it and I'll get the whole big frothy sip and the aroma. And then now I'm good to walk.
Wouldn't no lidding discriminate against people who ride public transit though? Like with all the stops? I don't know.
This is what I mean. You get so good at riding public transit. You'd be able to sense. You have this spidey sense of when you're about to articulate and brake and everything. I'm just starting out on my journey.
Okay.
I couldn't be more the opposite. Unfortunately, what you're saying has a real allure to me.
Yeah. Bill.
I'm always trying to reinvent myself through things like coffee lids, and that's not even a joke.
No, I know. I think I know what you mean.
But I am not. Not only am I like get the lid. If I go through the drive-thru, I ask them to put that little stopper guy in it, which let's be honest, should be just the default setting, right? Because otherwise the coffee, even with the lid, wants to come out and spill.
Yep.
I feel like that should just, I shouldn't even have to ask for that.
I wish it was okay to like drink out of sippy cups for adults. I think we should bring it back.
I know a person, good friend of mine, who when they lived in Queen Anne, her and her husband would take an evening walk with the dog and she would bring a sippy cup of wine. And she's very happy, with her life.
What I've never understood is, you get your coffee, you go over, and then you've got to get the sleeve to put on it because it's too hot.
Yeah.
So why don't you just make the cups thicker? I've never understood that.
And even less recyclable? No. Have you seen the cup monster outside the Starbucks headquarters?
But now you've got to recycle the sleeve, too. So what's the advantage? I mean, just almost everybody puts sleeves in their cups, right? So
Luke Burbank is going to be even more entertaining than this conversation.
If it's possible.
On Saturday at the Neptune. What time?
I got like a tight 20 minutes on recyclable straws
yep.
that I will open the show with. 7 p.m. at the Neptune Theater. Ken Jennings, John Roderick, Sophie Egan, a cavalcade of stars.
Chris Vance is a former Republican and now an independent.
And now the co-chair of Washington Independents, which is a new group dedicated to electing centrist independents to office. www.waindependents.org.
Welcome to the middle. Sydney Brownstone, reporter at The Stranger, always. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to The Week in Review. Let's do it again next week.